Good afternoon, Shadow Hills. Well, we're back, and the weather is beautiful. If it feels like 80, it may not be 80, but it's going to be there. It feels like it. And for all of our Canadian friends who are thinking about getting your second vaccine and coming down, it's definitely worth it. So there are some developments Kim wants to tell you about. Kim?
Good afternoon, everyone. Well, naturally, I pieced together the important questions of the week in order to try to describe in detail answers to those questions. The two biggies, but I'll go over some other stuff. The two biggies is some questions about COVID liability came back to me from some people trying to understand why we are just don't allow gatherings. And the crack repair, there's a crack repair project in phase one and two, and everybody sees it. So let me go through those details. But very first, some questions that have popped up quickly. Indoor pool. The indoor pool is still closed because the county and state orders specifically says indoor pools must remain closed. The language is that clear. A couple of residents asked and said, you know, I've gotten my vaccine shot. Can we open the gym for people who have got the vaccine shot? Neat idea. But currently, indoor activities are closed, except for the library. The state and county does not grant that exception. It's very simple. We are not allowed to open it. I would like to think they're going to get that message soon and let us do something about that. But we just have to wait. They won't allow us to open. The library is opened as we... told you, and the reason the library can be open is it's a specific exception within the law. So that's an exception to the state order. And then there was a question from, the election for the board is taking place now, as you know. Four candidates are running. The candidates can email residents, and consequently, some residents have asked me, why are the candidates allowed to get my email and send me a message? And the reason is the state of California changed the laws here about 2 years ago, and we are required to give an HOA board candidate the email list for everyone in the community. We have to do that, and they are allowed to email you. So what you do is if you don't want them from any or all candidates, when they email you, simply write back and say, I don't want any more messages, and then they can take you off their email list. They should take you off the email list. If they don't, let me know. Now, COVID. Okay, the COVID questions, the biggies that have been popped up. I've been asked why other activities may not open. So specifically, why not the gym? Why not the indoor pool? What's specific? What's going on? And what's the risk if we open the activity anyway? You all are reading, and I'm reading it. Numbers are starting to go down. Some people don't agree with the county orders. I get that. Board is not the ability. We don't have the ability to override the state order. So they ask, what's the risk if we open the activity anyway? So let me go through that. The first part of the answer is the board is trying to proceed carefully to protect the health and lives of all residents. That has been a priority, while still opening the activities safely. The board has an obligation and responsibility under the governing documents to follow the law. The board cannot arbitrarily disregard the governing documents of the HOA without facing potential liability issues. So I'm going to get into the description of where we have to be extremely careful in order to protect your financial interest. Therefore, the board has stated we are trying to follow the state and county orders while allowing as many activities to open as possible in accordance with the applicable state and county orders. Gatherings of no more than three households are currently allowed outdoors. Currently, the state and county orders do not allow for gatherings or visitors indoors. That's specific. This is all part of the state order from last March. So the outdoor three household rule is an exception in the state order from last March. The board has made clear each resident is to be responsible for following the state order on their property. The board has also made clear since last June that the HOA is not looking for violations of the state order on private property. Where the implementation gets a little tricky is the legal consequences if we do something different. Now I'm going to start to get into the explanation of what happens if we do something that doesn't conform. The board receives the question, if we are not looking for violations on private property, why don't we just say it's okay to have a gathering on private property or in a home? The answer is because the HOA may not implement something illegal without being in violation of its own governing documents. Therefore, we have said the homeowner is responsible for following the state law. We might not be looking for violations, but that does not mean we are giving permission for residents to violate the state law. That's two very different things. Some residents have written to me to get permission for a party in their home. The answer is currently no. And until the state changes the order, gatherings in a home are not allowed. We will investigate any complaint of noise or disruption because those are current rules for the HOA and it has nothing to do with the state orders. The legal liability here is quite huge for implementing the state order incorrectly. If the HOA gave permission for having a party indoors in violation of the state order, and then someone got sick or died, the HOA could potentially be held responsible for that person getting sick or dying. Such a claim is not covered by our insurance policy because virus-related claims are specifically excluded from insurance policies. If the HOA gave permission for a party or gathering inside a home and a claim was filed, the residents would be responsible personally for all attorney fees and damages. This could easily mean a potential special assessment where each homeowner would write a check personally for the claim. There is something the board is protecting very carefully to ensure the residents are not financially responsible for such a claim. It is unknown how much a potential claim could be, but legal fees and damages could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm sure the last thing a resident here wants is the board act irresponsibly, and then we send you a bill for $300 or $400. So, as we begin the opening process, the board is carefully evaluating the HOA's ability to follow the state and county orders in reopening the facilities so that residents are not liable for any lawsuits resulting from an HOA not following state guidelines. Now, this exclusion in insurance policies is about across the board. My business up north has the same exclusion, so we're trying to be extremely careful on how we implement policy. Unfortunately, insurance companies don't want to pay on these claims, and so it's specifically excluded. That's the issue, and that's what we're trying to be very, very careful about. It's to protect your financial interest. If you have questions about that, let me know. Now, the next big item was the crack repair, because as you watch the crack repair, you can see stuff, and everybody has an opinion. Well, is it right? Is it wrong? Are they doing it correctly? So let me go through the details of the crack repair and specifications in order to hopefully answer all the questions I've been getting. The HOA board has hired an independent civil engineering company to write the specification on the work and to inspect the work that's being done for crack repairs. This work is part of a master plan that we hired from the engineering company about 4 years ago, to help ensure the asphalt is maintained correctly with the least long-term cost. Keep in mind, asphalt's the most expensive item in the entire community as far as replacement and repair. Crack repair work is going on in phase 1 and 2, not in phase 3. Residents have asked why they can still see the crack repair when it's done. I get this a lot because people think, hey, you fix a crack in your wall, you get all done, you paint the wall, you can't see it. Well, that's the same here. The difference is we are not going to paint the street. These repairs will be visible when done unless we repaint the entire street, and that's not scheduled to be done at this time. Painting of the street, called seal coating, is not scheduled for another 1 to 3 years. We still want to do the crack repair now to protect the existing asphalt from premature failure because of water or blow sand getting into the crack. Asphalt's the most expensive item, remember I talked about that, so the more we do to protect it from premature failure, the less future costs we will have to pay. So let's describe, let me go through the detail of what exactly the specs are. The on-site engineering inspector is actually very pleased, he's been here, about the crack sealing work by IPS, that's the contractor, IPS. And IPS is supposed to seal cracks 1/4 inch or wider. So anything of 1/4 inch or less does not have to be done. Nothing is done to cracks smaller than 1/4 inch. They have completed most of the work, and actually a significant number of cracks less than 1/4 inch wide are also done. As the contractor goes through, they're just going, and nobody's taking a measuring tape and measuring every crack. They look, and so they just go. Hairline cracks they're not doing, but, you know, they might do a crack that, you know, is 1/4 inch or a little less. The reason we specify 1/4 inch or wider is that when a crack is less than 1/4 inch wide, the crack seal material will not go into the crack very well due to the thickness and viscosity of the material. Crack seal material can and will settle in some of the wider cracks, especially when they are closer to 1/2 inch wide or wider. Keep in mind, the cracks are generally as deep as the pavement is thick. When sealing cracks that are closer to 1/2 inch wide, the material will most likely settle. These cracks are sealed even though the material is not to the street surface. So you might look at a crack and you see material down there, but it's not to the street level. That's okay and it meets specifications. The point is there a bridge? The inspector looks on those cracks to make sure there's a bridge going across to keep the water from going down below. There are drawbacks to making the contractor go back and apply more material in circumstances where it's settled. The result will be the material is likely to flow down the crack to the concrete gutter pan and pool in the concrete gutter pan, which creates a mess when people walk by or drive by. Especially in the desert climate, when temperatures are triple digits in the summer, putting in that extra material can cause a problem. So, the inspector does not recommend having that contractor do that. The crack does not have to have material to the level of the street to have been sealed correctly and meet specification. IPS was very diligent in their sealing process. They had 2 crews sealing cracks. Both crews consisted of 2 separate crack seal trucks working in tandem as they worked on the road. It is likely residents will find isolated cracks or portions of a crack at or near 1/4 inches wide that were not sealed. They do not measure every crack, so some cracks just under 1/4 inches might not be done. This is acceptable given the specification. The contractor that's doing the parking lot, and that's a different contractor. There's a contractor redoing the parking lot entry on the parking lot. That's a different person. He was watching the crack seal work being done and told us IPS is doing a great job, and they even videoed the work for their own benefit. We did not seal coat after the crack repair process unless seal coating is not necessary and justified. This becomes the next question. Why don't we just seal coat it when it's done so we don't see it and it's all even and black? You can apply too much seal coating, which can cause a failure of the seal coating process. If you apply too much seal coating to the street, the seal coating will not bond to the asphalt, and it will cause cracking of the seal coat layers, eventually causing debonding. This debonding cannot be repaired. If a street gets too much seal coating, causing excessive hairline cracks, looks like broken glass or alligators, you know, that kind of stuff, all you can do is let it wear for as long as possible, and then you need to put down new asphalt. Very expensive. Some other HOAs will seal coat too often because the street is no longer black, but gray. And many will think that it means they need to do more seal coating. Some HOAs will actually plan on seal coating every 2 years, knowing that it will fail, and they'll just pay for more asphalt and it's more expensive, but they, you know, it can be a place where they're willing to pay for that. So, one of the reasons the age, so seal coating does not have to be done every 2 or 3 years when it turns gray. You need to have a civil engineer inspect it to make that determination. One of the reasons the HOA has decided for an independent engineering report is so we don't rely on a contractor's report, which might be motivated by getting the work rather than what is best. So you might have 3 or 4 contractors come out to the street and they'll all tell you, oh yeah, it needs to be done because it's all gray. And so you spend $200,000 to $300,000 seal coating and it turns out you're damaging your asphalt. It's very possible the seal coating can look old and worn out, but it's still doing the job and should not be coated again unless it's needed. Yeah, streets will look gray, but that does not mean we need to seal coat the streets. So when we are done with crack sealing work, we will not be seal coating this time. That's not necessary, and the entire street, which will mean all crack sealing work, will show. So all these cracks are going to show when we're done. Inspectors already looked at it, and that's why they give a long-term plan. It's in order to give us an idea over each year what needs to be done and why. Now, in phase three, many of you over there have been talking to me about, you have some cracks, some of them big. Yeah, some of them are, you know, 1/4 to 1/2 inch wide, no doubt about it. The inspector did check out all of these cracks. Phase three was scheduled for crack repair and seal coating in 2024. That was on the master plan. As a result of the inspection in phase three, and because of some of those isolated cracks, he's going to submit a new recommendation that the cracks in phase three should be repaired next year, January of 2022. Most of the cracks are not wide enough for crack seal at this time. Most of them. There are some that are big. I've seen them. Most of the existing condition of cracks in phase three, the engineer recommends waiting until January 2022 to perform crack sealing of select cracks at that time to meet specs. The current cracks in phase three are related to asphalt material shrinkage and thermal changes. They are not structural. Waiting to seal the larger cracks in phase three will not accelerate structural damage to the streets. So thermal cracks is expansion and contraction from hot and cold. A structural crack is because of weight. Garbage trucks. If you don't have asphalt that's strong enough to withstand the garbage trucks, that will be a different type of crack, causing different kind of damage. So hopefully that answers questions about our legal liability questions and the crack sealing. I wish you all a safe and healthy weekend. I'll be back as soon as we have more information, or if you have more questions, let me know. Take care. Thank you. We'll see you all soon.
Yeah, stay safe. This is going to be over soon. Bye-bye.